Dr. Eileen Claudius with some
pediatric pearls.
I'm here today with Ryan Pedigo. He is our associate program director at Harbor and an assistant professor at UCLA School of Medicine. And he's going to join me to talk about insulin pumps. Now, before we get into the details of how to use them, for people like me who kind of theoretically know what the pump does, but really have never looked at it, used one, don't really totally understand the components and the contents, can you go over some pump basics?
Those are great questions. And insulin pumps, I think, have a lot of misconceptions. So I think it is good to just start at the basics and then we can go from there.
Pump basics.
In the traditional insulin pump, you have basically a pager-sized brain, which has kind of the computer in it, which has a reservoir or cartridge attached to it that is full of insulin. Then that insulin goes via tubing to the insertion site in the skin, and that goes through a subcutaneous cannula where the insulin is delivered. The tubing, which connects the infusion set to this pump, can be connected to and disconnected from that catheter site. So for instance, if a patient were to shower, their pump is likely not waterproof. And so where the tube would go basically to the catheter that would go to the skin, you can usually disconnect at that site temporarily, take your shower, and then reconnect. That is kind of the prototypical traditional insulin pump, of which there are many different brands. And then there is one pump that kind of deviates from that called the Omnipod, which is what we call a patch pump. And that is basically a pager-sized reservoir and catheter set that you put the whole thing on your body. So it's a pager-sized thing that sticks to your body. And then the brain of the device is actually wireless. So this is the one that does not have tubing. But the vast majority of pumps that you're going to see are the typical one where you have the tubing and a subcutaneous cannula. The typical insulin that you put in an insulin pump is Lispro or Aspart, and those are what we call typically U100 insulins, which means there's 100 units in 1 milliliter. And so, for instance, I use an insulin pump because I have type 1 diabetes, and I use 0.7 units per hour as my basal rate. And so I'm using basically 1/100 of that in volume per hour. So it's a very, very small amount of volume that's actually being delivered.
So I'm not going to flood the room if I disconnect a patient's insulin pump, because my nurses would totally kill me if that happens, and understandably so. So that's good news. Now, I'm a little confused about the basal rate of the insulin in the pump. I always just assumed that it delivered a long-acting insulin, but then you mentioned Aspart. So what is the type of insulin that's used for basal rates in a pump?
So common misconception number one has been identified. And this is actually really critical. The insulin pumps deliver a subcutaneous continuous infusion of a rapid-acting insulin, such as Humalog in the US, which is insulin Lispro, or Novolog, which is insulin Aspart, into a single site. And that's also going to be the exact same insulin that's going to give you your mealtime bolus. So I am on an insulin pump. I am not ever on a long-acting insulin. So I am on, basically, you could think of it as a continuous drip of, in my case, insulin Lispro. And when I eat a meal, then I'm going to also bolus myself with additional Lispro to cover the carbohydrates that I'm going to eat.
So if I have a patient who has a pump and is not eating, what do I do? Do I turn off this basal rate? Do I pull the infusion set out of the patient if they're not able to help me by turning off the pump themselves?
So almost never should you yank the thing out as your first step, because if they don't have another infusion set to replace, then they are going to be at risk of developing DKA. Lispro or Aspart basically has a duration of action of about 4 hours, maybe 5 hours. And so if you remove that insulin infusion set from the patient, or you suspend the pump and they don't get any insulin coverage, they will basically very rapidly develop hypoinsulinemia and potentially could develop diabetic ketoacidosis. And so unlike people who are on a long-acting insulin who have basically continuous insulin coverage, if insulin pump delivery of insulin is suspended or interrupted or there's a malfunction, you can actually go into DKA relatively quickly. So if the glucose is 30 and you need to deal with it, then I would just deal with it by giving dextrose just like you would to a patient not on an insulin pump. And when their mental status is better, then I think you can either have them suspend the pump or you can determine if that's even necessary. Because just like if you had an NPO patient who you admitted to the hospital who was on Lantus, a long-acting insulin, and maybe Novolog for meals, which is a short-acting insulin, if those patients are NPO, you actually continue their basal insulin. You continue their long-acting insulin. Similarly, I have a basal rate on my pump, and I could go all day without eating and not become hypoglycemic because my basal rate is set correctly to basically just keep my blood sugar level, because I always need, just like you make insulin, you're always making a little bit of insulin to keep your blood sugar stable. I don't make insulin. This pump's basal rate, its continuous subcutaneous insulin delivery, is doing the same thing for me. So if I were NPO, I would actually continue my basal insulin.
Are there any other misconceptions you commonly see that we tend to have about insulin pumps?
The next misconception is that the vast majority of insulin pumps are dumb pumps. So they will only do what you tell it to do. And if someone comes in hypoglycemic with a pump, the pump is not actively trying to kill them. There's not necessarily even anything wrong with the pump. In fact, if they come in with a blood sugar of 400, there might also not be anything wrong with the pump. So the vast majority of insulin pumps require that the user feeds it blood glucose values and triggers boluses or triggers reduced insulin delivery manually by themselves, completely user initiated. So I use an Omnipod, and if my blood sugar is 20 or 200, my pump behaves no differently, because my pump actually does not even know what my blood sugar is, because a pump has no innate ability to know what your blood sugar is unless the user has fed it with a value. Many pump users have a second device, so a totally different device. Sometimes they are integrated and talk to each other, sometimes not, called a continuous glucose monitor. A continuous glucose monitor is another subcutaneous monitor that every 5 minutes, or depending on the device, slightly different time periods, will measure your subcutaneous glucose level. Some pumps will interface with that and make small changes based on your blood sugar levels. Some do not. So in my case, mine does not. I have a continuous glucose monitor, but my pump does not know what my blood sugar level is at any time unless I tell it. There are some more advanced ones now that have been approved in the last year, like the t-slim x2 with control iq, and those actually do interface with a continuous glucose monitor, and it will pull your insulin delivery if you're predicted to become hypoglycemic, and it'll give you a little correctional bolus if your blood sugar is predicted to be high, like over 180 milligrams per deciliter. But that is a relatively new frontier, and there is currently no pump in existence that totally takes over the work of glycemic control. It's still very much user initiated. So when I go to eat something, I have to look at my meal, see how many carbohydrates it is. I have to make my best guess estimate. And then I have to give myself the amount of insulin that I think is coverage for that amount of food. And if I'm wrong and I give myself too much insulin, then I'll become hypoglycemic. And if I'm wrong and I give myself too little insulin, then I'll become hyperglycemic.
Is there ever a time when the problem is the pump itself? Somehow the pump has malfunctioned and is trying to kill the patient in a way?
It is possible that the pump will have a pump failure, or the tubing will have a leak, or the infusion set might be disconnected, like the catheter might be disconnected from the patient, or maybe they have scarring in the place where they happen to choose where their infusion site is going to be. And typically all of those might manifest themselves in hyperglycemia or DKA. It is very unlikely that the pump would ever give you a bolus of insulin by itself. That basically cannot happen. So if someone is hypoglycemic on a pump, that either meant that their own user-initiated bolus of insulin was too much, or maybe they have something else going on, like something causing acute kidney injury where their normal bolus is now sticking around for longer since insulin's renally cleared and they're giving the right amount of insulin, but it's just sticking around for much longer. So definitely, if someone comes in with hyperglycemia or DKA, it is possible that there's an issue with either the pump, the tubing, or the site that they've chosen.
Now, we talked a little bit about hypoglycemia. What about the opposite end of the spectrum? What about DKA? If a patient comes in diabetic ketoacidosis, how do we deal with the pump?
I would preface all these with, if you have an endocrinologist who's available, that would probably be the best move, unless they're critically ill, obviously, then you might have to take action. But I would say if you were going to give the person a subcutaneous dose of rapid-acting insulin to treat their hyperglycemia or mild DKA, then you could just do that from the pump. And that basically will help you troubleshoot to see if it's an issue with the pump system or they just needed a bolus. So for instance, if someone comes in, their blood sugar is 350, maybe they're sick, maybe they have mild ketones and they look phenomenal. And you say, okay, well, maybe I'd just give this person a dose of subcutaneous rapid acting insulin. You could try doing that from the pump and you just give the exact same amount that you would as a subcutaneous correctional dose. And that will help you see if the patient responds to that bolus or not. Because if they do, then that means that the pump site is working correctly. And maybe the issue is their insulin sensitivity. So they're sick and they just need more insulin than they might otherwise need. Or maybe the issue is that they ate half a cake and they didn't bolus themselves for it. So if the patient is well appearing and you would treat them with subcutaneous insulin, I think it's totally reasonable to try to basically give them a correctional dose from their pump. And if they don't respond, then you know the problem is somewhere within the pump system. Either the insulin is bad, the tubing has a leak, or the infusion site is bad.
What if they do respond? What kind of discharge instructions am I giving? Do they go home and change the basal rate? Do they just do boluses in response to eating and hyperglycemia?
Have them talk to their endocrinologist or consult an endocrinologist if you can, because most people have sick day plans. So when I get sick, my insulin needs sometimes will double from baseline because I get higher insulin resistance from cortisol and other things. And so it's basically just checking your blood sugar frequently, giving yourself correctional doses for the blood sugar that you have. And if your blood sugar is persistently high, then usually they have the ability to check themselves for ketones at home. And that'll kind of determine whether or not they need to come in to be reevaluated or not.
Okay, now what about the critically ill DKA patient, the kid that is headed for the ICU? What do I do with the pump while managing that?
Yeah, in that case, I would just disconnect the pump. The best reversible way to do that is that most of the time you can disconnect the tubing where it basically attaches to the infusion site on the patient's skin, just like they would do if they were to take a shower, because that's reversible. So if later that day, let's say they look great and their gap closes and they want to transition them back to sub-Q, then they might elect to try to use that pump site again. But more likely, if they have a new infusion set, they'll use a new site. That said, for critically ill people, you know, you're not going to depend on that pump because obviously if they're critically ill, something's going on. Maybe there's a pump failure. Maybe there's the insulin in there is bad, or maybe there's a leak. So you should definitely take the pump out of the equation and then just treat them like you would treat any other DKA patient after you've disconnected the pump.
We've talked about disconnecting the patient, but isn't there some sort of stop or pause button on the pump itself?
There is a way to pause insulin delivery. However, it's going to be different for every single pump manufacturer as far as like which menu you have to go to. And as you can imagine, since these users are not on long-acting insulin, if they paused it for more than a few hours, they could actually develop DKA. And so the pump, it's not easy. There's no like quick thing because if somebody were to do that accidentally, it would lead to DKA. And so you can pause the pump. But the only time where I would just have the user pause the pump is if they were awake and they could do it themselves. Because the chance that you as an emergency physician are going to know how to do that is very low. But if you had that hypoglycemic person, you gave them some D10 and then they are awake, then absolutely they might need to pause their insulin delivery, but they could do that themselves. I wouldn't recommend trying to learn how to pause insulin delivery on the 5 or 6 big brands of insulin pump because it's just something that's not going to be intuitive or user-friendly to do.
One of the advantages to having parents in the pediatric emergency department is that often you do have another person who's not sick, who is comfortable managing equipment like the patient's insulin pump.
Yeah, 100%. If there's a parent available who can pause the insulin delivery, then you don't have to disconnect anything. You could just pause insulin delivery for a few hours, and hopefully by then you can contact an endocrinologist for subsequent steps. But just make sure you don't forget about it because eventually it automatically will then unpause once the elapsed time is done. Usually it won't let you pause it indefinitely because that would then lead to DKA in almost all scenarios.
Well, you're right. With my luck, the parent would probably go missing at exactly the time I wanted to restart the pump itself. So you bring up a good point. Anything else about pumps you feel would be important for us to know?
So I would just underscore that if someone comes in with hyperglycemia or hypoglycemia, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's something wrong with the pump. The pump is not a cure for type 1 diabetes. It's an effective therapy, which requires a lot of user intervention. So if I eat lunch after we talk and, you know, I'm like, oh, this meal looks like 50 grams of carbohydrates and it's actually 30, then I will likely become hypoglycemic and I'll have to eat something to bring my blood sugar up. Because again, most of this is still user initiated and requires a great deal of user input. Similarly, if I ate a cake after this, then my blood sugar would probably be 400. And again, in my case, the pump actually would not do anything unless I told it to do something. So I think the biggest thing is, although yes, more and more closed loop systems exist, it is not 100% foolproof because it still requires quite a bit of user intervention.
Thank you so much for joining us. This has really empowered me to feel comfortable interfacing with patients who have pumps and possibly managing some diabetic complications with a pump as an ally rather than this sort of unknown adversary.
Summary.
Insulin pumps are devices that we are seeing more frequently, and it's beneficial to know a little more about them. Keep in mind that insulin pumps typically contain one of the rapid-acting insulins, and it's delivered as a continuous infusion, also known as the basal rate. When a diabetic patient who has an insulin pump presents to us with a diabetic emergency, be it hypoglycemia or hyperglycemia, we often focus too much in on the pump, and we think it's probably the pump's fault. In fact, usually the patient who has the pump attached to them is the problem. They're sick, and it has nothing to do with the pump. So just because the patient comes in and their blood glucose is high or low, there may not be necessarily anything wrong with the pump. Now, it is true that pumps can malfunction. There can be pump failure. There can be a disconnection of the tube. There could be a leak in the infusion set. But these problems typically manifest with hyperglycemia or DKA, not usually hypoglycemia. If you see hypoglycemia, it was probably a user error, i.e. they gave themselves too much insulin, or they may have a concomitant problem like acute kidney injury, where their normal amount of insulin, which is renally cleared, is now too much for them. Almost never should you completely remove the device or suspend the pump, because in those cases you will run the risk of DKA, since these are short-acting insulins and have shorter half-lives, and they have a continuous infusion that's going, just like the rest of us do. If we're not eating, we still have insulin pumping through our bodies. If the patient is hypoglycemic, treat as if the patient was not even on an insulin pump. Just give the appropriate amount and type of dextrose. Now, if your patient is hyperglycemic, consider a dose of insulin through the pump. This will be both therapeutic and diagnostic potentially. If the pump is working and the insulin is good, they should respond to that insulin and their glucose should come down. And you've shown that their pump system is fine. If you do have the patient who's in DKA or critically ill, you may want to take the pump out of the equation. In those cases, it's probably wise to disconnect the pump and take over, and treat as you normally would. The good news with patients with pesky pumps is that they have endocrinologists who usually love them, and you can consult and call to get advice about how to manage the pump. Patients themselves are also quite knowledgeable about their insulin pumps, and they can help troubleshoot the pump and even deliver insulin for you if you want to do so. So good luck with your next insulin pump patient. May the force of the pump be with you.